It's a gold episode this week, with the quality of the show reaching new heights. When a Russian student asked the law firm for help, claiming she's set to be deported for political reasons, the firm questions whether her claims can be believed. The woman claims she was a participant in a rumored video involving the US president, a Russian hotel suite, and two sex workers. It's the liberal holy grail, but is it too tantalizing to be true?
You know, I used to laugh at the absurdity of the news. Now I'm all laughed out.
Gather your legal briefs and have your water pistols at the ready. This is the Good Fight SBS Fan Podcast. It's our weekly discussion about the TV drama The Good Fight. It's our deeper dive into the show with an exploration of the real-world stories that influenced the TV show The Good Fight. My name is Dan Barrett. I'm an editor here of the SBS TV site The Guide. Now joining me each and every week, it's my pal, my comrade-in-arms. It's SBS Life Deputy Editor Sarah Malik.
Hello. I like comrade-in-arms. That sounds very like we're going in for battle.
Well, we are going for battle. We are reaching the final third of The Good Fight season 2.
Oh, no. That's sad.
It is sad, but...
Yeah, look, I don't want it to end. I feel like I want to keep going.
Look, here's the thing. I reach an episode like this, and I could not have been more excited to run into the studio and record this with you.
Okay.
Because this, quite frankly, is maybe one of the most fun hours of TV I think I've ever seen.
Oh, my God. I know. And it's so close to the bone. Like, I think you're right. Like, I think the political climate is so ridiculous, and the stories that come out of it are so outrageous that the temptation for shows to reach into real life to just play around with the stories that we see in the media landscape are just, I think it's irresistible. I think it's great. So, yeah, they've gone there, the golden showers tape in this episode. And, yeah, it gets nefarious. It gets bizarre. And, yeah, it's funny watching the reactions of the lawyers in the show, having the reactions that we have to this kind of stuff. Like, are we seriously living in this world where this is actually, like, happening? And that scene where Diane was like, can really tell like the quality of where you're at by the quality of your enemies, you know, the age of Watergate and you know, all of that. And now we have like, this is what we're dealing with today. So it's funny. It's amusing. It's disturbing.
Now, I'm amazed we've made it this far into the episode without using the phrase PP tape. And let's just say that's a phrase.
You enjoyed that. I think you liked that. You were like, I can't wait to just insert this in every conversation.
Well, I'm just thinking people listening to this should maybe go and get a bottle of their favorite beverage, put it down on a bench next to them, have a few shot glasses, and take a drink every time you hear the word, because you'll be pishnickered by the end of this podcast.
He is just loving it right now. Dad has just got a big grin. Let's remember the time when everyone was Googling, what is a golden shower? Do you remember that? This is what we've been reduced to in our current climate, that we are actually having to research these things and put it in Google. Everyone's done that. We're like, what? What is this?
Sorry, there was a revelation here. This is a real talk moment. We're going to talk very seriously like adults.
Right.
This is the first time that you had to like look up golden showers on Google?
No. Like before when the story first was circulating.
Like you didn't know what a golden shower was pre-Trump?
I didn't know what it was. Look, maybe I'm just innocent. I don't know. Maybe I'm like living in a... Did you know what it was, Jeremy? Did you have any idea?
I only know because Jeremy told me once.
Okay.
Jeremy's like, our audio engineer.
What's a gold? Is it like a euphemism? Is it like something to do with money or bribery? Or like, what does this mean? And then, yeah, I was like, oh, this is weird. There's some weird shit out there, man. The world is wacky.
Look, the world's an interesting place.
I just need to go back. I'm just an innocent brown girl in this crazy world. I don't know what's going on.
What I think is fantastic about this as a hour of television and why I was so ecstatic to watch it is that this, I think, is actually the only TV show where I could imagine them doing a storyline about the Trump PP tape and actually have it feel legitimate. They didn't treat... I mean, it's treated with great humor in the episode, but at the same time, it's not treated like a joke. It's actually treated like something which quite likely exists in reality and something of which is difficult to talk about because it really does work counter to grown-up discourse about politics and culture and the world that we live in. And a show which I think delves deep into the very ideas of politics, culture, and, you know, the world that we live in. No other show is really doing what The Good Fight does. And I think this is the only show that could tackle the Trump PP tape with not feeling like they're just doing it purely for jokes, but rather it actually speaks to the integrity and the values of this program.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm amazed. I just think bravo to them for going there and making this kind of commentary. Like, I don't think any other shows would be brave enough to tackle a lot of these issues. And it does it really unflinchingly and head on. So, and I think that it's a real insight into maneuverings of what goes on in these kinds of circles and how these kinds of scandals would be treated or would be covered up or, and you know, it's deliberately vague, you know, it doesn't.
What's the cover up that I think the show really looks at?
Yeah, definitely. I think it gives credence to conspiracy theorists everywhere. You're like, you know, there is a lot of information that we don't know and we don't even know we don't know. And I think that's what's sad, I guess, about contemporary journalism is because it's so fractured. I think there are not enough journalists who are really calling things out and there's a lot of things
I think there's enough journalists calling this one out.
Yeah, this one, yeah. But I mean, just in general in the landscape, I think that there's so much going on and there's so many stories that are not being told because of the fact that there's not enough really good paid journalists kind of on the case with it or they're really under-resourced, you know. That's a tangent, but I think that's something that made me realize that there's just a lot of information out there that we don't know, that we don't see, that, you know, things that are happening that are not right or people who are not being held accountable, and a fractured mediascape means that there's just not that accountability process happening.
Well, what I think is interesting, just talking about journalistic accountability, first of all, there's a really interesting doco series coming in the next, I think, about a month and a half, called The Fourth Estate, which is largely looking at US journalism through the framework of the New York Times and looking at the resourcing and everything that they have in order to try to find the truth in American politics and modern life. Really interesting doco series and coming to SBS, which I think is very cool. So we've got that on the horizon.
Watch that.
You should watch that because it actually is good. I've seen the first two episodes now and it's fantastic. But one of the things that the show does deal with is a thing called Project Veritas, which I think I wasn't going to talk about this till later in the podcast, but you have talked about like the truth behind journalism and this is probably the entry point to that. Do you know what Project Veritas was?
Okay. No.
So this is the thing which kind of became fairly well known to people in about November last year. And what it is, it's this guy named James O'Keefe. He's a guy who, he used to work with Andrew Breitbart, the guy that launched the Breitbart website, who's now passed away. But he used to work with him and he's now running this Project Veritas program, which the idea is that the organization specialized in sting operations on traditional media organizations, and it just tries to embarrass them. It just tries to discredit their work just generally. So the reason why everyone suddenly knew what Project Veritas was is in November, the Washington Post received this message from a young woman of whom's like, I've got this story, and it was related to Roy Moore. And so she had a story about him. She comes to the Washington Post, and the journo sat down with her and they didn't really believe her story. But as she left their meeting, they ended up getting someone to follow her and she went straight to the Project Veritas office. Now, what was interesting is that when they've got these sting operations, operatives like this young woman, they'll bring along a camera and will record the entire thing. And then when the journalists look like they're salivating over a story, they'll effectively then just launch the video and discredit those journos for having an agenda rather than wanting to actually pursue the truth, which is an agenda in itself, but yeah.
Oh God, that's sneaky.
It really is sneaky. And so
and elaborate as well.
Yeah, so all the hallmarks of that incident are captured within this episode of The Good Fight, where you've got this young Russian woman, Dominika? Yeah, Dominika, who comes into the office and she's got this very elaborate story regarding the PP tape, but she's got this big blue bag that she places down on the bench. And so I thought it was fun entering the idea of Project Veritas as a story through this much broader idea of the salacious Trump PV tape.
Yes.
How drunk are people now? Is that like 12 shots? Is that where we're up to? Yeah. And so they're looking at Project Veritas through that. And I thought, well, that's kind of a clever way. And so we're going to explore Project Veritas. But that it was only really the first third of the episode. After that, it actually becomes a bit more interesting and went so much broader and grand than I expected, which is exploring what happens if you receive this tape. Mm. It's something of which is certainly impolite to talk about in mixed company, but you're also talking about a video which reportedly features the President of the United States on this tape. So, I mean, that suddenly becomes a historical document of considerable importance, considering that the conventional thinking is that if this tape exists, Russia's bribing the US president, which is why he's been so soft against Russia with a few political moves in the last, 18 months now.
Yeah, and definitely I think the process of them kind of interrogating this woman and her story and the tape itself kind of reflects what, you know, journalists and lawyers do all the time, which is trying to make understandings of fact and kind of understand what's being said and sifting through it and finding out what's real and what has the evidence behind it. And if you are a good journalist or a lawyer, you will be doing that all the time. And it's a tricky process, and it's a process that requires you to constantly reevaluate new information. And you see that journey through the show where we're kind of in the position of Diane and the lawyers, where we're at where they're at, you know, like, so we're like, oh God, that bag. And, you know, she's definitely got the camera in there and being wary. And then Diane's like, oh no, I actually do remember being at that lecture room. And so that kind of really tricky process of learning how to figure out and interrogate and be critical of the information that you've been given, and trust as well. And that's kind of the process of any story that will require you to kind of delve into places that you're not even you don't even know that you're going to go there. And then with the FBI, they think they could trust them, and then they realize that that's not their agenda either. And it's a really interesting little rabbit hole that we go into with them, and it's a stressful one as well. And it's never foolproof, and that's what's scary. You know, like, you can never have all the information. You have to base your decisions on, do you have enough to be sure? So I really liked how they explored that in the show for this episode.
Getting more specific about the episode, I like that we're back to Diane and there's kind of some resolution on the microdosing storyline we've seen run through the show. Mm. Last week, we weren't sure whether or not she was going to continue with her dosing or whether or not her supply dried up entirely. So we weren't sure if maybe that was it for her. Mm. But we know now she has stopped. Okay, at least this is what she tells Marissa. But she's watching it. And what I thought was kind of fun about this is we've seen her watching the news and we've seen her watching some very ridiculous stories that were clearly a figment of her imagination because of her dosing. But we're watching her as she watches this story about this ridiculous story about Trump taking 5 goats over to, it was a conference of some sort, but supposedly had 5 goats. And what you see as the news story goes on is that it wasn't really 5 goats. There was a typo in a White House media release and it was 5 goals that he was taking to this conference. And that was kind of fun because it's playing with the idea of not only that Diane has been dosing and seeing fictional news stories, but also the incompetence of some of the media releases that are coming out of the White House. And just last week, there was a story with the passing of Barbara Bush, and there were all these typos and mistakes through the media release sent out. So this is a thing that's actually
happening.
What's happening?
Like, why is the world ridiculous? Like, I don't...
the right response.
There are no words. I mean... Have you seen Kanye's tirades recently on Twitter?
Let's not even.
I mean, you know, he just recently posted a tweet about MAGA.
Make America Great Again. Hashtag MAGA.
Hashtag MAGA. And the president retweeted it. And I'm like, do these people not have actual work to do? Why are they on Twitter? Isn't there things that need to be done in the world? Like, what's happening?
Yeah, Kanye's got a lot of stuff that he should be focusing on.
Like, why is the president retweeting Kanye? Really? Like,
no, actually don't have a problem with a president being open on Twitter, but it's a side thing. Let's not even spend the hour and a half that conversation leads us down. With the very beginning of this episode, Diane's watching goats on screen. Mm. Now, for fans of The Good Wife, the goats are a very welcome return because there was a very long ongoing joke in the show about some NSA surveillance guys who are watching the characters from The Good Wife, and they used to trade around goat videos. So the very opening second of this with a goat bleating, okay, it's pretty much harkening back to all these goats in that show. And what I'm wondering is the fact that that's framed around this idea of, is Diane microdosing still? I'm wondering whether or not this is some sort of joke for Robin Michelle King, who wrote this episode, and created The Good Wife, now The Good Fight, whether or not they're just making some sort of joke about, yeah, we were clearly on drugs when we were doing all that goat stuff back on the last show. I'm wondering if that's kind of just been playing around there.
Like a bit of an inside, you know. I've really been enjoying Marissa and watching her come into her own this season and just develop that confidence and assertiveness, because I think that's something that a lot of women struggle with at work and in their lives. And yeah, this episode especially, you see her, you know, she's got the real swish professional clothes happening. She's pushing back against the senior partners a bit more and coming up with her own opinions and ideas. And especially at the end where she tells Diane, look, no, you know, I do have evidence and proof that this what in fact was him in the tape because of this. And I think we need to do something about it. And that's really refreshing and empowering to see. Especially because I think youngish women, I think people fail to realize that everyone who acquires power in life or becomes this finished product, they didn't start that way. You know, it actually requires a lot of evolution and growth and hustle to get to that point. And you're seeing that with Marissa. So it's great.
Yeah, we're seeing her get better and better at her job. There's also her becoming more confident in dealing with the senior partners at the firm.
Yes.
So there's that great moment in the episode just after they've gathered together the entire firm as they're seeing whether or not the young Russian woman is telling the truth or not. And Adrian gestures at Marissa and says, you know, can you get the door? With the obvious implication being be on the other side of that door. Marissa walks across the office, closes the door, and then he looks at her just with a, you know what I would say, and then she has this massive smile and just sits down.
I love that. I love how she starts pushing her back a bit, and I think that's something that's I find really empowering because it's a struggle sometimes to assert yourself or stand up for yourself in environments where you don't have a lot of power or you haven't really been used to exercising that power and or if you felt diminished, you know, by other people at work or in your life. So I think I love seeing Marissa come into her own, push back a bit, you know, even at the end when she's like to Diane, no, the bathrobe was him, you know, like I can, this is the evidence. This is, I have the proof for it. I think we should do something about it.
Yeah, they found the gold room and I found it interesting that she managed to find it through ChumHum, which is the search engine of choice on the show. Because yes. I tried looking up for pictures of his bathrobe on Google and all I found was mid-80s bathrobe pictures. So that's the power of ChumHum right there.
Okay.
How did you feel about the return of Jane Lynch as the FBI agent whose name I haven't actually committed to memory yet?
Okay. I'm neutral about it. She doesn't like set me on fire or anything. Like she's all right.
I feel the character's a bit overused and too quirky for the character's own good.
Yeah, I think so. Like she's okay. Like I don't think, oh, wow, I'm excited to see her again or anything.
Yeah, like the duplicitous nature of the character I think is kind of fun to play around with. Why they engaged her in this one, I'm not too sure because she's proven already that she's not there friend.
No.
But then there was the scene with the pigeons flying against the window and that was just was that step too far for me.
Yeah, did you feel like that was just, it didn't really work?
No.
No, I think they were trying to make some kind of point about
I don't know, what are they making a point about?
I don't know, like something like just a bit macabre and a bit like incongruous and just maybe highlighting that, but it just ended up being like overdue. It was a bit of an overkill, I think.
Yeah. I like there was that scene where she was saying that Dominica was clearly lying because they've heard the details of the tape and they were blonde prostitutes and not the brunettes of which Dominica was claiming.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that seemed like a fairly damning statement because you would presume that if such a tape does exist, then there probably are details about that floating around to people in reasonably high levels of government, but also their underlings as well. So I'd presume that the FBI agent, whose name is Starkey, I'm pretty sure, she'd probably be aware of some of the murmurings.
Yeah, it wasn't really clear. I think they must have seen the tape for themselves and realized that what she was saying was untrue.
But I mean, clearly it was true because Eastman has the USB stick. It says pee-pee on the side, which made me laugh pretty hard. But we see her put it aside for the October 2020. So clearly she knows that the tape is real. She wants to use it right before the next presidential election. And she puts it away in her cupboard, kind of like that warehouse from the end of Indiana Jones and the Lost Ark, which I thought was fantastic.
Doesn't it just make you want to have like a secret safe where you put like some secret things that will, you know, shock the world? And you're like, oh, I wish I had some kind of secret compartment.
I have the unedited tapes of this podcast at home.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
There we go.
That's explosive, Dan. That's going to...
It redefines explosive.
Yeah.
Now, there is another movie illusion in this episode that I could not have gotten a great kick out of, which is where you've got them getting that PP tape USB stick to begin with, and they put it into Adrian's MacBook, and they start watching the tape. And they're standing behind the screen, and it's just glowing, like it's this orangey yellow glow. And they're watching it and like they're not really describing what they're seeing on the tape, which we kind of know what they're probably seeing on the tape. But they're not really describing it so much as they're just kind of in awe of watching it. And Julius comes in and he's in awe of it as well. And I'm pretty sure this is a visual gag that's supposed to be relating back to Pulp Fiction. You got the scene at the beginning with this briefcase, which if you remember the beginning of Pulp Fiction, they go to this apartment to get this briefcase. Anyway, they open up the briefcase with the combination code 666. Open it up and never ever see what's in this briefcase, but rather it just has this like yellow orangey sort of glow coming out in the exact same way. So I actually went back and watched that scene and the dialogue's slightly different, but I'm pretty sure that's kind of what they're getting at here.
I didn't even get that reference. I didn't even see that.
Have you ever seen Pulp Fiction?
I feel like being on this podcast is like an indictment of my very meager pop culture knowledge. Yeah, Dan's watching me with judgmental eyes right now. Like what? What are you doing here? How could you even be in my presence not having this biblical pop culture knowledge that I have?
See, you're saying this that it's an indictment upon you not knowing much about pop culture.
I do, but it's more. Like I don't know the references like you do. Like I don't have this whole like, oh, that was from this
Here's the thing.
Here is not, I could do that with books, but probably
Sarah,
not shows.
This is what you don't understand. This podcast is a celebration of the very limited interests I have in the world.
They may be limited, but, you know, it's better to be good at a few things and really good at them. And, you know, that's what you do.
Yeah, Dan Barrett, master of barely anything.
You're the king of TV.
Oh, look, king. I mean, I see it more as a voted position. It's a democratic process.
Just own it, Dan. You know, we've been watching Marissa own it. You got to own it.
Yeah, president of TV, please.
Dan's blushing right now.
Oh, shucks. This episode also has the ongoing storyline with Jay's friend who was imprisoned with some dodgy evidence being put against him with some police of whom were placing weapons at scenes.
I love the scene in the courtroom where Jay's friend gets acquitted or his sentence gets commuted.
Yeah.
Because I think it just really reveals how Kafkaesque the whole legal admin bureaucracy system is. Like just with a flick of a pen, your life can change. And with a flick of a pen, you can, you know, be incarcerated for life. And it's just all of these maneuverings that can, you know, impact somebody at the bottom in such powerful ways. So
absolutely, because yeah. It's not happening because of something that he's done or hasn't done.
No,
rather it's because Colin Morello is needing to have a political win so that he can claim that he's the friend of the African American. And therefore, you know, he comes down and just waves his wand and gets the guy free.
It's the waving of the wand, isn't it? Like, it's, yeah, this is what kills me sometimes, just how precarious and how chaotic life is and the legal system is and there's people's lives in the balance.
Now I'll admit this part of the storyline didn't really thrill me all that much. I mean, I liked the Colin Morello part of it. I thought that was kind of interesting because I kind of feel that while this was such a important element of last week's episode, it was kind of what's the plot device this week, and it was being used explicitly just try to get Colin and Luca together a little bit more and give them a shared purpose, which is faking their way through the meeting with one of the higher ups of the Democratic Party in Chicago in order for him to secure his position.
I think it shows that Luca has a little bit of drive in her and ambition in her herself. Like, I don't know why she's helping him so much, but maybe, you know, she does kind of enjoy this process. Maybe they do have a bit of a Bill and Hill thing happening, you know, that we are bonded by our ambitions, not just despite our personal failings or despite our personal relationship.
I mean, I
thought it was interesting how they call him up on his record as a prosecutor because, you know, Colin's a good guy. He's dated a black woman. He's, you know, a good liberal. But it does show that there people act in implicitly biased ways in ways that they're not even aware of.
And yeah, I think unconscious racism.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I really like being called up because I feel like it can feel like you're a crazy person calling people up for the ways in which they don't even know how they're operating or the way in which they're exercising their power that replicates existing systems.
The thing, though, just to keep in mind with him is that it's not necessarily that he is unconsciously racist, which that might well be the case. But what it might be suggesting a little bit more is that it's a system that he's working for that does have some racist elements built into it. So it's a system of which definitely persecutes people of whom are of different ethnicities other than white people, but also different classes as well. So people of whom are less economically well off, who generally tend to be people of, you know, other racial makeup. Often they're the ones of whom are persecuted through these systems, and the system's designed with the idea that these people are sent to prison.
Yep, 100%.
Very quickly, I just want us to wrap up and just point out some of the very cool cast members that we've seen come back in this show. So we've got Fisher Stevens, who was playing the not very good lawyer, and I thought that was played a little bit just too much for laughs for something of which was already so ridiculous with the other storyline with the PP tape. I thought it was a little bit too much, but I also really liked seeing Fisher Stevens on screen. So, you know, I was kind of cool with that. But the cameo that I really wanted to point out here, and an actor that I suspect we're going to see more of in this show, is William Ragsdale. Now, he's the dude that Julius bumps into in the cafe. And he's the Republican guy of whom the two of them are talking about the fact they need more journalistic graduates of whom are Republicans to, you know, fix the problems in today's society.
There are not enough conservatives in the media. Like, but that's obviously the problem.
That is the problem. Do you know William Ragsdale at all, though?
No.
I suspect that you don't know a little TV show called Herman's Head from the early 1990s.
No, Dad, I don't.
Shocking. William Ragsdale, if people know Herman's Head, like, that's Herman. But he also made a brief appearance in season one of Search Party, which you can watch here on SBS On Demand. How's that for a plug?
Oh, that was such a natural segue.
Seamless.
Just effortless, Dan.
Management will be very happy with me. Keys to the executive washroom. That's what I'm getting. Anyway, this probably brings us to the end of yet another Good Fire SBS fan podcast.
It's been too quick.
Hasn't it just?
I know.
Anyway, we are going to be back next week talking about probably the Good Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, people can find us on Twitter. Sarah Malik, where do people find you?
I'm at Sarah B. Malik. So yes, hit me up and let's continue the conversation online.
Yes. Have you ever continued the conversation online? Don't answer that.
I will if you message me. I don't think anyone's messaged me. So
I think Andrew Hedge might have one day. What a day.
Oh, really? Okay, well, I apologize if I haven't continued the conversation online, but I'm very willing to continue the conversation online.
Can we have a conversation online?
We can have a conversation online.
Yeah, well, we're going to do that in a moment. Okay. I'm just going to tell people you can find me on Twitter at TheDanBarrett. Use the hashtag GoodFireSBS. If you're enjoying this podcast, we've got a whole bunch of other TV-related podcasts here at SBS. There's Batman Land, where we talk about the 1960s Batman TV show.
Mm-hmm.
It goes out every Friday night in line with the TV show on SBS Viceland, which I think is at 7:30 on Friday nights.
That is your fifth plug of the show. You are doing so well.
But I've got two or three more. I could also mention The Playlist, which is our friends Nick and Fiona.
Yay.
And they're talking about whatever's going on in TV and film that week.
So many good things to watch and to listen to. Yeah, if you're interested in like cool stuff, it's your jam.
Yeah. Last week they had a good chat about the Avengers movie. Also, launching this week, brand new podcast about The Handmaid's Tale. Yeah, you'd be a Handmaid's viewer.
Love it.
My good friend and boss, Fiona Williams, she's hosting it. Mm-hmm. Alongside your good friend and your boss.
No, it's like the boss's podcast. Yeah.
Her name's Natalie Hambley.
Yeah. Natalie and Fiona are going to do a great job.
Yeah. And also we've got Sana Kudar, of whom is neither of our bosses, but she works alongside us and really nice lady.
Lovely.
Anyway, she's really smart and savvy and she's also Canadian, but I try not to hold that against her too much.
They're nice people, Canadians. They're too nice.
They're too nice and that's my problem with them. Anyway, Sana's too nice. Anyway, we'll try to get that out of her in the podcast. But anyway, check out the Handmaid's Tale podcast, which is called Eyes on Gilead.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 1 went out the other night in line with the TV episode going to air. In the same way that the Good Fight SBS fan podcast goes out when you can watch The Good Fight on SBS every Thursday night at 9:40 p.m. or catch it anytime at SBS On Demand.
Get into it.
35 different plugs. What an exit to this podcast. Mm-hmm. Folks, we'll be back next week with about 85 plugs, but also a little bit of conversation about The Good Fight.
Yay.
We'll see you then.
Bye.
This podcast and its contents are not endorsed or sponsored by CBS Studios Incorporated or The Good Fight.